Okay, teams. Sorry? Right. Do you want me to... All right. Wow, there was a buzz in the room. I've just been walking around some of the tables and I could feel the energy. I don't know if you all stuck to the exam question, but especially this group over here. But what I'd like you to do, we're going to spend 5 minutes per team, and we're going to go around in a logical order from 1 to 6. I noticed that Yoel's group over there hasn't written very much. I've been trying to encourage them. We'll see.
It's not Yoel's group.
It is now. So I kept on going around saying, you will nominate a scribe. So we'll leave you till last so you've got time to do something. Okay, so first of all, let's hear from group number one.
Hi, me again. I couldn't convince anybody else at the table to do the speaking, and since I did the writing, here we go. But I will defer both to Susan Seppa and to Alan Ose, and Susie and others who provided some of the content. But we were talking about patient engagement, and came up with, I think the best thing we can tell you about is we came up with a number of resources. First of all, the patients included is also called .org, so that's a great, can you hear me? That's a great resource, and the point was made that engaging patients, you know, even if you're designing a conference like we are here today, engaging patients doesn't actually mean putting them on the podium and asking them what they think. Engaging patients turns out to mean try and get them involved in what program you're actually going to develop. Get them in at the beginning. That was meaningful to me as a conference event organizer in this society, but it also just kept coming up as a theme early on. Get the patient involved early on. Get your project charter. Look at where the patient could possibly be involved and try and set those checkpoints and do that. So please remember patientsincluded.org. We also talked about that there's a struggle. We're having struggle making things provider-centric, and now we want to make them patient-centric, and really now we're talking about user-centric. Maybe we won't see those as such disparate groups in the future in terms of who's the priority. Beyond that, I might have told you all of this already. A lot of, you know, stories are really powerful, and letting patients tell their story and then informing the patient so then the people that the patient might work with in the IT world get to understand and get to know the patient, and then figuring out from there where the patient can be involved. Stories are really powerful, as we heard from Yoel today about his home domestic situation. I thought that was really powerful. So that's a good way to get these relationships started. And further to that, I'll bring you some more resources. The IAPP, International Association of Public Participation. Susie suggested that. And maybe you want to say something about that? Or
they provide a nice framework to help you get clear on how you want to engage with patients, what their role would be. And if you're working with the Patient Voices Network, which is coming up, that's the framework that they're using to guide a lot of the work. So
go take a look at IAPP. And also, of course, Patient Voices Network, and those of you who have been with us before know about them. But I think the next time we invite them, perhaps we'll talk to them before we invite them and before we've designed our program and get their take on what we should be doing and who they might send. That was a big thing around Patient Voices Network. They are purported to be incredibly trustworthy when you go to them and say, I've got a project, I need these skills, I need a patient who can come and talk to us about this. They apparently will go out and find that patient for you. So great network to leverage. And of course, not every IT project has a role for the patient, but maybe there is more. You know, we talked about a little bit about challenges, like why wouldn't you involve the patient? Well, because we didn't used to. Maybe because it's going to slow us down. You know, they're not technical. What value could they bring? I think we're all starting to understand they can bring great value, but it's a bit of a sea change. And sort of once you've had the patient in the project, it basically the consensus was once you've actually had the experience of working with a patient, having them in your project, you won't ever run another project without them. So good experiences and sharing those stories is going to be important too. A couple more resources before we stop here. CIHR, Susie? And the last thing we'll say is that I think we sort of touched on this already, but getting your patient, getting your decisions around how you can contact patients at the beginning is, you know, written into the project charters that you have to do that, but doing it at the outset and defining where they could be valuable for before you get started. Susan, did you have anything you wanted to add from this discussion? She maybe stepped out. Okay, that's it. Thanks. Did I miss anything? Okay.
That was 4 minutes and 8 seconds. Not that we're counting. Thank you, Group One. So that was great. I realized when I introduced Group One, I forgot to ask them to start out by saying what the question was. So Group Two.
Can you guess?
Yeah, we got it. We got it. Patient engagement. That's really helpful. I loved it. Group Two. And could you... Is it Shayna starting? So who's... Okay, you're Group Two. Are you up, Mark? So okay. We're ready to start the watch. And if you could just remind us what the question was before you launch. Thanks.
Sure. So our question for Group Two is about patient, medical, home, and multidisciplinary care and what the challenges are in IM and IT. So we came up with quite a long list. So the first thing that stood out to us is the word teams. So really, the teams are evolving. There's different members involved. There's different types of practice involved now connected around a patient. And so this is quite a challenge, I guess, that we'll have to address. And really, we need a solution to allow for virtual collaboration across those teams. So enabling a nurse to talk to the physician, to talk to the social worker, to talk to somebody else in a way that's effective. And that leads into the communication side of things. So how did they communicate? What messaging tools can they use? How did they record the information that they capture? And how can that be accessed across the continuum? So in different EMRs, in a personal health record, how can we make sure that everyone has access to the same information to provide care around that patient? The next thing was about referral processes. So an electronic referral application. And we talked a little bit about how now referrals are made often based on availability or access or a wait list. But how do you take that and move it to become the best fit based on the patient's needs? So rather than who's the first person available, who's the best person for that patient? We talked about policy standardization and privacy and security policies across the entire province so that we can make sure that this is consistent and, again, around the best fit for the patient. They may not be the person right in their immediate level of care, so it could be outside of their region or jurisdiction. Access to data and system resources from outside of the network, so making sure that everybody can get access to the information no matter what their scope of practice is. Having an internal system available that's connected to allow for consistency of information within the network as well. And then stepping back from IM and IT, we talked about the alignment of care models. So starting this with making sure that the care models are aligned, whether it's a walk-in practice, a virtual clinic, family practice, or a specific population. So if there's specific needs to that population of patients, making sure that the silos are broken down and we look at the continuum across care from end to end. We talked about how the practitioners are changing. There's more generations that are in practice. They have different needs, different skill sets. How do we make sure everyone's trained up and all their needs are met? Building capacity to access primary care, so leveraging hospital usage stats and information to be able to say where do we need to add capacity, what time of day, what which ways can we make that available to stabilize the demand and supply curve. Using analytics based on the data to allow for proactive care management. These have to be usable and in real time. So making sure that the information isn't just information overload. How do they actually take that and apply that to improve practice, evaluate the effectiveness of the things that they've put in place? We talked about specializing primary care. So somebody gave the example of COPD patients, so having a GP that specializes in a specific population or type of care. Using the data that they gather and exposing that to others to kind of help with best practices and other standards. Provider quality of life is important, making sure everyone has work-life balance, making sure that what we try to take is realistic and won't burden the practitioner system. We talked about processes. So we need processes to connect the team together and funding to enable this. So starting out with a philosophy of care to develop a care model, and then making sure that the incentives and the fees are aligned to this to be able to enable that care. So quite often I think there's creative solutions to enable this type of care now. Let's make sure that the funds are aligned to allow that to happen more naturally. Trust in relationships, support the circle of collaboration. There will be differences probably between rural and urban populations, so consideration for that. Back to privacy and security, we talked about allowing the patient to opt in for how they share their information. I personally am a specialized care patient. I want my data to be available to everyone. I don't care what barriers are in place. I just want access to it. I'd put it on the internet if I could, but the barriers are there, and really allowing that patient to be the holder of that information, I think would be a benefit for some people who just aren't as worried about privacy. Thank you. That's it. And the last one was centralizing the data in the personal health record. So allow the EMR to support the workflow and the processes and then ping for the data as they need it. So using it from a centralized place and letting the EMR enable that care. And the last one was more of a thought around how blockchain may change this and how the data control of the health records may evolve with blockchain as it emerges.
Bing. All right, so that was the closest one. So a fantastic round of applause. That was great. Thank you so much. Nobody mentioned fee-for-service as a condition to enable the primary care home, but we won't go there right now. Group three, just give a quick summary of what it is, please, Shanna.
Guilty of going off tangent at times, because I think we had quite a complicated topic that we were tackling. But anyways, bear with us. Our topic was what mechanisms around the IMIT governance and what mechanisms we need to ensure that the goals that we are focusing on and are the right solutions and they meet the provincial needs, and that we're basically doing the right things the right way provincially. So what we felt was that there needed to be some empowerment to patients and to health authorities from the Ministry of Health to do kind of all of the following things that we were talking about. We felt that oftentimes, you know, it gets sort of lost in the you know, Ministry of Health world sometimes. So it somewhat needs a bit of a culture shift in our province to do some of these things. So it's, you know, not a small task, but there does need to be really strong leadership that can sort of drive some of these things forward as opposed to a bit more of the collaborative committee-based structures that we have today that sometimes don't achieve the things that we need in the time we need them. So our focus, you know, we talked a lot about collaborating versus consolidating, and that, you know, we're not all going to necessarily have the same person we report to, and all the different organizations will report to different groups, and that doesn't need to be a barrier to progress. We should trust each other and collaborate and make sure we're doing things together in the right ways. We talked a little bit that sometimes that there is a fear about the politics, or fear of making any sort of personal negative feelings towards people when you bring up issues or bring up problems, or, you know, when you're in these committee-based structures, because you don't want to, you know, insult what might be somebody's domain. But that also can then cause there to be a lack of communication and a lack of transparency. So we felt that this one went a little bit off my thought there, but a provincial strategy that is well communicated, and not just a strategy, but a framework with an action plan, needs to be driven at the provincial level, but then the empowerment of the health authorities to then act upon that and move that forward. We talked a lot about there being too many committees with only updates happening. So an example, you know, you spend a week going to all the different committees to update them on your project and your process, and then you realized you lost a week of progress because you spent a week giving updates on the week that you just had. And then you spend the next week thinking about what you're planning to present at the next committees. So all of us can associate with that. So then, you know, that took us to a little bit about working groups versus committees, and really trying to have meetings that are focused on an outcome and outputs versus just updates and information, which information and updates are important, but there are definitely other mechanisms to get that out as opposed to bringing people together in the same room and talking through updates. Getting the right people with authority and competency was key to us at the tables, but that combined with a delegation and trust. So you don't want to have, you know, Susie Smarty Pants at every single table, who knows, you know, you want to make sure that Susie has a team that can support her and she trusts to be there, and that there's a collaboration. That wasn't intended to be directed at anybody. I just threw it out there. A good idea that came out was trying to solve problems using real life scenarios that are built that are achievable. So not necessarily trying to theorize these big giant solutions that are going to solve the world's problems and make everything. Let's find a small a manageable problem that we can use a real-life scenario to walk through a solution and then try to demonstrate that solution, even if it's on paper at first, and then move forward. So that took us to, you know, the saying, perfection is the enemy of progress, and I think that a lot of us can associate, you know, that's what we try to achieve. And people need to feel that there's a culture and acceptance of failure. So you can't move things forward with progress if there's not an acceptance and awareness that you will sometimes fail when you don't strive for protection and perfection, and that has to be okay, and a culture shift's required for that. So iterations, you know, the word we all hate sometimes, pilots, one more minute, agile environments are all sort of approaches that are more flexible that could lead to that. Non-proprietary solutions, leveraging open software was, of course, some of our friends in plastic surgery's idea, which are, you know, definitely the way we should be going. Bringing industry knowledge and contribution back to our health institutions. So let's not propagate this problem. Let's educate our up-and-comers in the industry, in the HIMF program and other programs out there, to make sure that they are aware of what the industry are, and let's all us as either graduates or contributors to the industry give back to that organization and to the education to make sure that, you know, they can help solve these problems as we move forward, because they're not being solved in 1 year. And then also, for those who don't come from the HIMP program, encourage expertise from other industries that we can learn from. So we're all thinking the same way with the same hat and the same experience. So we want to do things differently. Make sure that there's some public pressure and awareness. So oftentimes the public doesn't know about the state of organization and information management that we have out there. So let's get the public putting pressure on the ministry to actually make some things happen and drive some change. More transparency about the current state and issues so that people can help to propose solutions. But again, that leads back to trust and it being okay to fail. Provincial think tanks or other areas, doing some integration solution versus, you know, the big box solutions that we are going towards. And then making sure privacy doesn't get in the way. There, you know, sometimes there's a lack of awareness about what the real privacy regulations are, and that the perception of the privacy issues is bigger than what the actual privacy regulations really are. So making sure there's education, awareness about the regulations there, so that we can actually not spend time, waste time around issues that are non-issues. And yeah, that's the, sorry.
Wow, most thank of you, Shannon and team. Yeah, that was great. Give a round of applause. There was a lot of lessons, but I think that was also a therapy session, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You know, we all feel better having just talked about it.
Yeah. I've had a year of mat leave to just really pontificate and think about it.
And Shana and I worked together on a number of things, and I can relate to a lot that you were saying there. Thank you. So, yeah, I know. All right, thank you. Next group, and remember the question first. Thanks.
Hello, everyone. Our group was tasked with looking at improving the integrity of client identity management. So we looked at the MPI, the Enterprise Master Patient Index, and where it's at, and what are the problems with it right now. And so, I mean, right now it's not considered the truth of the stretched source of truth, right? Because not everyone is on it. It's there. There's a golden plan for it, with the ministry leading the charge, and everyone is excited about it, and they want to be on it, but there are a lot of limitations. There's costs attached to it, all that other stuff, and it's slowing down the adoption, right? And until everyone is on the system, you're going to have multiple identities all scattered throughout, and you know, you just can't really have all the data quality that you can utilize to clean everything and have a single source of truth. So to move things forward faster, we thought about ways to have improve adoption, and that includes pushing some of the responsibility, or not pushing the responsibility, including the private vendors, because it's easier to get connected with the EMPI in the health authorities, but it's not so easy with the private clinics out there with the EMRs, right? You know, if we can create like a single standard that all the EMR vendors agree to, and this is a vetted standard that you don't have to look at individually with every single provider, then you can implement that more quickly. The other issue that we talked about was once you implement it, It's actually sort of still confusing and difficult to use. We had some users here of the EMPI, and they still find it's difficult. So there needs to be more processes in place after. So it's from beginning to end. It's the whole continuum. You implement it, you don't leave it alone, and then you run away. So you continue to work on the system and improving it so that the adoption is there and there's continual usage of the system. And to fix all the potential duplicates and whatnot, allow the users to do a self-serve, right? And I mean, if in Google, I have multiple email accounts, and it allows me to connect them all, and perhaps we can have some more rigor around it because it is patient data and all that. But there are ways to get past that. So, yeah, I think, was there anything else we talked about? I think that's about it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That's great. Good job. Anyone? So we had a bit of time on that one. Anybody got any questions on any of the groups we've heard so far? Good? Okay, let's go to this group here. How many are on? Group five. We had 2 flip charts for you guys?
Well, as many as we can have.
Absolutely. All right.
Recommendation, we needed tape, so we could have taped up all the walls. So this is the virtual care group, and the question was challenges around virtual care, and the challenges and the possible solutions. So we defined virtual care first, and if you can read my handwriting, you will see that it's pretty much all the technologies that we use today, starting with telephone. So we're not just talking about video, we're right down to monitoring, secure messaging, email, patient portals, teletriage, the nurse on the phone. And we need to think about patient portals even, just not only so that the clinicians have access to data, but also patients, so that they can be in the same space making those decisions about their care plan in virtual space. We talked about synchronous and asynchronous care, and we talked about the users being not just patient to provider, but provider to provider. And then in some scenarios, there's more than just provider to provider. Maybe there'll be a third party, another provider on the line, or family member, or other people. Ultimately, it's about a controlled, a connected system. So lots of challenges came up, starting with the risks of depending on technology, which makes me laugh because we experience that every day. Usability, the time to coordinate care, which today we experience as a challenge. Ease of use, access to patient information for the decision maker, for the consultant who's talking to the patient from somewhere else. The lack of a minimum data set, having access to connected tools outside the health authorities. So right now we have some within, but reaching out into the home, reaching into primary care, primary into the home, primary into another community care. We talked about access to broadband as a challenge. Access to approved tools because of privacy and security issues. Okay, that would work, except that it does a relay through the state somewhere, so we can't use it because the information gets a relay somewhere. We talked about the challenges associated with the concept of a virtual walk-in clinic, such as the disruption of care, and the potential increased costs of duplication. Is this care that we've already given or we will need to give again? So is it duplicating effort or is it actually reducing cost? We also talked about, is this a 24/7 approach or is this just a 9-to-5 approach? And if it's a 24/7 approach, what about the processes to enable that care? Primary, specialist, technical, and also making sure that we have quality of care. Who's on the other end? Is Dr. Nancy really a doctor? How do we authenticate that the doctor is who they say they are, but also that the patient is who they say they are? So lots to think about. Also, in terms of quality, do we always have support where the patient is? Sometimes we need clinical support, and we may not have that there. Overall, it must be simple. It's got to be easy to use. And I think that came up right from the beginning. Usability was was considered a risk, a challenge. So simplicity comes back. We went through solutions and we talked about lots of different solutions. But what we recognized, it's really about connection, everyone and everything, everywhere. So having health information actually connected across the system so we can identify the information we need when we're looking to make decisions and think about the optimal approach to care. Also tying the systems together at the back end. It's unlikely that we're actually going to have one system for everybody. One size does not fit all. So can we use API integration like we do on our cell phones to be able to have different applications and maybe even switch out the application because somebody down the street has just created something that is so much better? Maybe we need to be able to access tools as they change. We talked about the minimum data set as a priority. We talked about privacy standards for privacy and security. We talked about making sure that that the community can use some of the resources that are inside the health authority, using the cloud, making sure that it's accessible on a cell phone, mobility, integrated into workflow. And when we talked about all that through and through, what we're visioning really is some kind of a provincial solution that can tie all of this stuff together and deployed in a regional kind of way. And then, of course, the patient stuff came up. So maybe it should come up first, but we need to talk to our patients. What do they want, and even more, what do they fear, so that they'll be able to get on board and access their patient this way as well, their doctor as well.
Thanks, Nancy. It's a close one between Shana and you for the most words in 5 minutes, but that was great. Amazing. Thanks a lot. UL's group. Of course, it's not UL's group. Yes, it is. Who's the speaker? Oh, there you go. And don't forget to mention the question.
Yes. Can everyone hear me? So as you can see, we kind of forgot to fill everything out on the flip chart, but that's all right. So our question was around consumer health solutions. So the private sector and the public are steaming ahead with health apps that range from a personal health record to sensors. So for example, blood glucose, blood pressure monitoring, and behavioral nudges to improve lifestyle. So our question was, what are the opportunities for the healthcare system and what strategies should we consider to respond? So we had a lot of discussion around this, and we did discuss a lot of the challenges. One of the things that first came up was quantifying the opportunities that we have and kind of looking at what the return on investments are. We kind of need to look at evidence to help us select what the right consumer health products we need to look at. Some of the other opportunities were around using consumer health information for clinical decision support, as well as for education and possibly using it for targeted public health interventions. So for example, if we had a patient health portal and the patient was able to look at their information as well as to input information from their consumer health products like their Fitbits or other apps that they have for blood glucose monitoring, that could in turn be used by clinicians to help inform their decisions, and at the same time, it helps the patient to be involved and engaged in their care. In regards to strategies, we looked at an agile approach, so starting from a small, focused scope, and then building a tangible success before we look at the bigger scope, and creating some sort of confidence in that. Because a lot of times in larger health organizations, we implement solutions that we know have been tried and tested. And a lot of times with apps, you get a small subset of people using it. So if we could focus on something where you can have a large number of people and it actually provides evidence that it's working, that it's actually helping the patient, then that can in turn possibly be used for a larger health organization. We also did talk about data standards and how that's kind of the big topic is data standards and regulations. How do we, like, who owns the data if it's a consumer app? Where does the data end up in the end? And how do we even start looking at data standards? So we did talk about like partnerships with standards councils, public organizations, vendors, and startups, and maybe providing startups with an idea of what the public health sector is like and what sort of standards we have available so that they can take that information and use it when they're developing their apps. And then, is there anything else that I'm missing? Okay, I guess that's it. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you. So thank you, and thank everybody. I think that was great. So the value of that, of course, is the conversation that happens within the groups as well, because that was obviously a lot richer, and we will be synthesizing all of this and sharing it. So right now, you're on a break, so it's a relatively short break, and then we've got Betty De Silva, speaking about EMR integration, and Daryl Samoyle. Where's Daryl? Is he here? Is he outside? And for those of you who are thinking about scooting off early because it's Friday afternoon, I would think twice because Daryl is definitely worth waiting for. So enjoy your break. And we'll
so
see
is
back
the door time. Prize. The door prize is worth waiting for, yeah, but only if you fill out your evaluation. I've also, your sugar is now outside, so that should help get you through the afternoon. And if you have any notes from your table that haven't been on the board, please give them to the good Susie. The good Susie would love to have them.